Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be here talking about car repair, car questions, what kind of oil. My husband says this. My father says that. My wife does this. Is that good? Where should the kids ride, in the back seat or in the trunk? Those kinds of questions we can handle. Now, today I'm flying with a junior pilot named Jeremy, but Jeremy and I go back 11 years ago.
When how dare you?
and we start, well, I started, when I started at KKNT, Jeremy was my engineer. And so we met back then, and Jeremy has been promoted throughout the years, so we don't see one another much, but Gil, my regular engineer, and producer, his father passed away, and so Jeremy's filling in for him, and so it's been a long time. Jeremy, have you been in any trouble lately?
I've been playing it good so far, staying on everybody's good side.
Yeah, well, that's not something that I strive for, and nor does it happen on a regular basis. But nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You can ask any kind of question you want. You can do whatever you want. Just let us know. And what helps speed along the show and also helps me is we start with year, make, and model and mileage of the car. So I have a 2012 Ford Edge, and it's got 100,000 miles on it, and da-da-da, and this is what happened. It's not important to me with respect to what Google said or anything like that, because I have story after story after story where someone has said something about Google said this or Google said that. I'm going to give you an example. I'm not going to give you names, but all my friends will know who I'm talking about. So we had this off-road vehicle. It's a Yamaha Rhino. And the Rhino came out with this new designed idea of a fuel pump that ran off of engine vacuum. Now, your engine in your gasoline-powered car has a major suction area in the top of the motor, in the intake manifold. So it's like a big vacuum cleaner that runs all the time, and it's created by the engine. Well, the Yamaha Rhino uses the vacuum from the engine to operate this vacuum-operated fuel pump to deliver fuel to the engine. So I sold this Rhino to a friend of mine, and he's been having problems over the last couple of years. And I saw him on Facebook the other day, and he said something about that he had Googled this Yamaha Rhino running out of fuel issue, and they said that you needed to adjust the valves. Well, I couldn't contain myself. I thought I was going to have to change my drawers laughing. However, there is merit to it, but it's so minute and small, it's not even funny. If the exhaust valve or the intake valve needed to be adjustment, it would be because they're too loose or too tight. If they're too tight, you're going to have some backfiring going on, and you're going to have some real performance problems going on. And so the least, if you have no vacuum to run the fuel pump, first of all, you're not going to get the motor running. Second of all, if you do get it running, it's not going to run very good because it's got this bad vacuum problem, and it's got the valves that need to be adjusted. So if the valves are too loose, they're clattering. If they're too tight, then it's backfiring and on and on and on. So I laughed at him, and I said, I'm kind of hurt because we have been friends since 1973, and you have my cell phone number, but I hear you going to Google on Facebook, and what happened to the electric fuel pump I put on your Yamaha? He goes, well, when I started having this problem, I took it to this guy, and he says, no, we cannot use the electric fuel pump. He says, you have to use the Yamaha fuel pump. So I said, okay, well, when I sold it to you, you had the electric one in it. And you've owned it for like 3 or 4 years, and everything's been fine till now. Yes. So what happened? Well, the electric fuel pump Mark Salem put in started leaking fuel. So my mechanic says, no, I'm not going to replace that. I'm going to put it back the way it was from Yamaha. And I said, okay, how long ago was that? He goes, about a year ago. I said, so how's it been then? He goes, nothing but problems. He says, I'm constantly having to crank and crank and crank and constantly getting stuck and installing and dying and everything. And I said, okay, well, I think the historical data that you've just given me says that I was more right than he was because ever since he put you back the way you're supposed to and you had the valves adjusted, I might add, then you still have the same problem. But so I took a snapshot of the invoice I found from 2017 of the electric fuel pump I put on the Yamaha. And by the way, it's a low pressure pump. You can't run 15 to 20 pounds of fuel pressure through this Yamaha Rhino. The fuel pressure has to be between like 3 and 5 pounds. So there is a specific specification that you have to order the pump to match. So anyway, I sent it to him, and hopefully he's going to have somebody put the pump back on it. But he's been stranded. And yesterday, Gordy and Daryl were way north of Payson, again, hauling his Rhino home with ramps and a trailer. And I don't know. I just don't know. But nevertheless, that's a day in the life of Mark Salem. But if you've got a car problem, 602-508-0960. But leave the Google stuff out of it, because I don't care. There is no way in God's green earth that somebody that lives in Mississippi, Illinois, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Colorado, Utah, there's no way they can diagnose your car any more than I can over the radio. However, the difference is I can ask questions and get closer to the problem. And I've been a master technician since 1991. I've been a shop owner since 1979. And I've processed quite a few 100,000 cars and trucks and motorhomes, tractors, bobcats, boom lifts, diesel motorhomes, diesel trucks, all that stuff. So I've been around the block, and I have a really good staff, and I have a really good family participation in our business. And this isn't about our business, by the way. That's the reason I never mention it. It's about you. It's about helping you. And one of the things I'm really proud about is that the number one question since 1988, I started in Phoenix on the radio in 1988. In 2011, I came to KKNT. Back then, the number one question was, where's your shop? And I really felt uncomfortable about beating my chest like that. So I would say to them, where do you live? As a result of that, the best car repair shops list, according to Mark Salem, was created. And it appears at MarkSalem.com. The shops, I know the owners. I know they're good. I know they have good staff. I know they're honest. I know they're dependable. I know their wives. I know their kids. We all are a big family. And on my website, it says this. If you have a problem with one of my shops and you go through a normal dispute resolution process, i.e. the Better Business Bureau, and the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to give you back $422, and the shop says no, I will. I'll give you the money back. I'm that sure of my list. I've never given a dime back since 1988. Never. Because every shop that did something wrong fixed it. We never even got to the dispute resolution process. So I'm real proud of these shops, and at this show, I want to bring them to your attention. We've been blessed with a good business. We're down in Tempe. We're not centrally located. As a result of that, that's the reason why I kind of stay away from the question on where you're at. Anyway, one of the shops I wanted to tell you about real quick is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, Brian and Thelma have been working on cars in the Mesa area. And before that, in the 60s, Brian's family, mother and father, and Thelma's mother and father had gas stations in Mesa and worked on cars. So these two young people have been around cars their entire life. The only shop in Mesa that has been able to pass the muster that's created by me is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. It's the only shop. They have ASE certified technicians. They do a good job. And knock on wood, I've never had a complaint about them. And that's really great. I've never had a complaint about a whole lot of shops, and then if I do get a complaint, I am involved in the adjudication of the complaint, but at the same token, I'm really proud of the shops that those are few and far between. I might have one or two complaints a year on what effectively might be 20 to 30 shops. So anyway, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, you're welcome to call in 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Jeremy will answer the phone. You can say, wake up, Jeremy, and then that will snap him around. And then you can say, I want to talk to Mark, and he's going to ask you your name. And then we're going to get you on the air. So 602-508-0960. So here's my last story before we have to take a break. This morning my wife wakes me up really early. That's what she says, but I'm up at 5 and she's after that. So she says, hey, I want to run. We're in Payson right now. I want to run to Pine. And she has some space in a boutique there in Pine called Fancy Finds. And she says, and I sold something and I want to fill the spot. And I said, okay, fine. I'll go with you. So I helped her put this little chest in the back of her car, and we drove up to Pine. And I wanted to stop at McDonald's on the way out for coffee. She said, no, I acquiesced. Okay. I use words I can't spell, so don't ask me to spell acquiesce. So we get there, and I said, do you need me to help you? And she says, just help me get the little chest inside, and that's it. I said, okay. So I had brought my iPad along, so I'm sitting in the car. And then in the corner of my eye, I keep seeing the entertainment blink, and it's looking for her phone. So she's in there quite a while, and I just kind of doesn't. So she comes back out, and guess what? The battery's dead. The battery's dead. Now, we're kind of sweating because Pine hasn't woke up yet. I don't have any jumper cables in her car. I do in my truck, but not in her car. Through the grace of God, this lady who also has some floor space at Fancy Fine, she stops, and she's my hero. She has jumper cables, and she knows where they're at in her husband's truck. So we get them out, and we jumpstart the car, and we drive back to Payson. We stop at McDonald's and get what I wanted to get on the way up there. So here's what it did. I went home, and the first thing I did is I took a voltage reading of the battery. Now, I had just driven about 20 miles, so I expected it to be north of 12 and certainly below 13, because 13 is really the biggest number you're going to see. And it was 13, so I knew that I had a surface charge on it. So then I put my voltmeter on the battery, and I know that the battery's at 13 volts. I'm happy to see that, but if she hits the key and it clicks and the voltage drops below 9.6, then the battery's shorted. And I'm thinking, it's okay, I'll just go buy another one. Well, it starts right up. And then the voltage goes from 13 to 14.1. That means the alternator's working. Ooh, wow. So I put a charger on it, and I put on a 15 amp for like an hour, and I'm just going to top off the battery, and it's an automatic charger that will shut off itself. But here, the numbers, you're never going to remember the numbers, but the most important part of this is I should have been paying attention because I had evidently done something on her car that allowed her car to continually hunt for her phone. And I should have just reached up to the entertainment center and just hit the cancel button. But that's probably what ran the battery down because I didn't have the door open. And I wasn't using any of the electrical devices. I was just sitting there with my iPad trying to answer emails. But anyway, that's something that happened today. But the most important part of that is three numbers. Your battery should never drop below 9.6 when it's cranking the engine over. And most of them probably won't drop below 10. Number two, a fully charged battery is 13, and a functioning alternator will be between 14 and 15. And obviously a functioning alternator means the motor's running, okay? So those are the numbers that are really, really important if you're going to keep track of that kind of stuff. 9.6, need it to crank the engine over, so if you hit the key and it goes click, 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 if you look at the voltage, it's going to be down in the 5 and 6 range. That means that the battery is dead, but you can't determine a battery's bad till you try to charge it. You got to charge it first. So you can't just automatically go, oh, well, the voltage dropped to 6 volts, you need a battery. Well, never mind, the brake lights are stuck on, that kind of stuff. So anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Oh, Jeremy. When we first came to KKNT in 2011, Jeremy taped that for me. And we didn't think... And I don't think he thought either that we were going to get the management to let us play that. But ironically enough, they were really, their concern was, is, are you okay with that? And I said, oh, absolutely. It's something we get commented on all the time. So Jeremy, even though, that was 11 years ago, it's still something that comes up a lot.
I love to hear it. And I am always waiting for that email to give us the 86 on that. But as long as we haven't got it, we'll let it play.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Another shop on the other side of town, Thompson's, is in Mesa, but Larry Harker's is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's got quite a circle around his shop because there's not a lot of shops in that geographical area that have been able to pass the muster to be on our list. So it's really, really important for you to know that I have sent numerous people from that part of town to them with problems that when they talk to me, they start off with, I've got this car and I've got this problem and nobody can fix it. And then we go to, well, what did the first guy do? What did he say? Did he make any progress? Did he make it better or worse? What did the second guy do? The third guy do? The fourth guy do? Blah, blah, blah. Well, virtually everyone, and I say virtually because I don't know of a single instance where they weren't, but they were able to take care of things. So from a diagnostician point of view, they're really in the top 5% of our industry, probably in the state of Arizona. I'm not even quite sure I would put me in the top 5%. I might be 6 or 7, but they're very good. Now, they also do oil changes and tire rotations and all the other automotive work. But if you have a car that makes a noise only at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, and you want somebody to probably track that down, they would be the first shop I would send you to. Larry Harker's Auto Repair, and that's 38th Avenue and Indian School. When it comes to car repair, ladies, and I'm talking to you now, ladies and mothers and wives and stuff, I know that your husband's going to tell you what to say, but you can do certainly anything you want to do, but when you get to the auto repair shop, hopefully you're the primary driver of the vehicle you're dropping off, and hopefully you will just give them the symptoms, and at the very best, you would simply write down your story and hand them that piece of paper with your regurgitation of the symptoms. This is when it happens. This is how it happens. This is what I do to make it go away. And when I apply the air conditioning, it seems to make it worse. Those kinds of things. Those are so important. Don't forget, the diagnostic money is going to be built somewhere between $150 and $180 an hour. And I'm going to try to bracket the entire industry for the metropolitan area. I'm going to say 140 to about 180. So the more information you can give us, the better off you are with respect to cost associated. But even more important than that, those kinds of pieces of paper oftentimes travel around the shop. And sometimes some old guy or some young guy or someone will say, hey, I just fixed that. And check this and see if you have voltage at this pin, and then go ahead and go drive it. But when you're driving, give it gas and hit the brake at the same time gently, and then do this and do that. And then if you have that code set, then here's what I did to fix my car. And that's the kind of sharing that should go on at most shops, and I think it does. But the more information you can give us, the better off you are. Wives, and don't tell us that your husband said to do this. Try not to. I mean, if you have to, it's okay. But if you come in and you say, my husband wants you to change the spark plugs, hopefully your shop is educated enough to understand that there needs to be more discussion. Like, okay, what's going on that he wants us? Is it just due for a tune-up, or is there a problem he's trying to solve? I don't know. Okay, could you have him call me? Because that's going to make a difference. What I need to know is I could create a problem that wasn't there by putting spark plugs in it. Or I probably put spark plugs in, and that could cost him a couple $100s, and we're not even close to the repair. So just have him give me a call, and let's talk about what's going on and what he thinks it might be, and ask him why he wants me to do spark plugs. Now, sometimes the husband will call back, and he'll say, it's due. According to the owner's manual, it's 100,000 miles, and I just want you to replace the spark plug. Beautiful. Beautiful. No problem. Gotcha. Gotcha. So those are the kinds of things. And the days of putting spark plugs in your car and having the bill be $80, that's kind of gone. Sometimes the set of spark plugs, depending on whether it's a 4-cylinder, 6-cylinder, or V8, depending on where they're buried, sometimes those spark plugs can be $600 and $700. The good news, it's once a year or once every 100,000 miles. But the bad news is it's a whole bunch of work. Now, on our way in to get the spark plugs, we're going to be in different areas. So if we're going to have to take the valve cover off to get to the spark plugs, then, and I'm using stupid examples here, but just for basic classroom techniques, I guess you'd say, then we should put gaskets on the valve cover. That would be the best thing to do. So you're going to pay to have the valve cover gaskets replaced, and oh, by the way, while you're there, would you unscrew the spark plug and put a new one in? You see my point? So there's a duplication of labor, so let's not pay to do the spark plugs and then 6 months later pay to do the valve cover gasket because the labor's the same. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Labor and how we bill it is a moving target right now in our industry. We're all pretty busy. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to stay in some kind of a range between the lowest and the highest in our geographical area. The problem is unlike before, and I've been in this business, in a gas station business, since 1968. Before, we just had a labor rate, and we all kind of just bottlenecked together. There was somebody out there at $26 an hour, and somebody was at $23 an hour, and everybody was in with, you know, maybe 22 all the way up to 27. But we were all kind of together. Today, whew, it is Ollie oxen free. I mean to tell you, I know specifically that there's independent shops, chain stores, and dealerships that have a variety of labor charges. So some of them go maintenance is going to be 120, diagnosis is going to be 180, and major engine disassembly is going to be 200. So we're seeing a variety of labor rates and a lot of movement with respect to designated labor rates. There's still a lot of us older gray-haired guys that are sticking pretty close to just where we're at. And I know that most of the guys in my geographical area, along with us, are in the 140, 150 an hour labor rate. But we're seeing quotes from a variety of other independent and dealership stores in the 170, 180, 190 area. But I also want to tell you this. It doesn't make a lot of difference because most labor operations are one or two. And when you're talking about the difference between 140 and 145, you're talking about $10. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Have it your way. Don't call, and I'll just talk for 2 hours and talk about cars and not even tell you any secrets about cars and not side with the women who want me to say that their husbands are wrong, that they say that they should use cruise control at 20 miles an hour. And then, wives, you can say to your husband, it doesn't work at 20 miles an hour. Or I should say most of them don't work at 20 miles an hour. Nevertheless, there's another good shop and a transmission shop. You understand that we went from transmissions that used to cost $300 to take them out, rebuild them, and put back in the 70s and the 80s. We probably went to about $800. Today we're at the $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 range for transmissions. The good news is those old transmissions, you'd replace at least one of them in the first 100,000, sometimes two. So their life expectancy might have been 30, 40, 50,000 miles. The new ones today will go 150 to 200,000. And let me open that up different. 100 to 200,000 is the normal time that the transmission will die. But obviously it's going to cost you a lot of money. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around Phoenix since 1968, and here's how you know they still can work on your new transmissions. Everything in the old transmissions was all about shifting from first to second to third to fourth, whatever, okay? We would use different devices to do it. So we used cables, we used vacuum pressure, we used throttle pressure, we used centrifugal clutches, we did all kinds of stuff to make it shift from first to second, second to third, okay? Today we use a computer to make that happen. So everything really is the same, we're just making it happen differently. So if you have a transmission problem, the only shop I can recommend in Phoenix is Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, and believe me when I tell you that Phil has met Barney Rubble. He's been around that long. When we had old stone tires on our cars and trucks, that's how long Phil's been around. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Picking a shop is kind of tough if you move into a new geographical area and with all the people that are moving from one house to the other, sell this one, buy this one, that kind of stuff. There's a lot of you looking for shops. There's one thing that you can do that kind of works pretty good. You can go to an auto parts store during slow hours, usually really early in the morning or really before they close, and then kind of walk up to the counter and find the oldest gray-haired guy there. And then this can be an AutoZone, an O'Reilly's, a CarQuest, a Napa, any one of those stores, and you just say, I'm new to the area, and what I'd like to know is there a shop around here that when they order the part, they keep it, and they don't try it on the car, and then they don't send it back? Because they're using your car, your brand new parts to diagnose the car. And I want somebody who's been around a long time. I want somebody that has a little gray hair in his eyebrows or in his facial hair or on top of his head. I want somebody who knows the difference between right and wrong. And I want somebody that you would send your own mother or your father to. And he pays his bills. That's the criteria. There's going to be an older guy at an auto parts store that has a shop that he perhaps uses himself. And that's how you can find a shop in your geographical area. You can also go on the internet and go to Yelp and some of those other places, the Better Business Bureau website, and look at their reviews and stuff like that. But keep in mind, auto repair, even my own store record, it is the smallest of disputes turn into the giant world-shattering thing because, you know, the windshield wipers are still streaking the windshield. So you just take all that into, and I'm not trying to explain, I'm pretty sure we have four and a half stars somewhere around there, but I'm just saying that it is an emotional issue when it comes to car repair because the car is an important part of people's lives. So if you're looking for a car, you might try there. You might also ask some of your neighbors. But more important than who do you have fix your car, how long have you been there? What you're looking for is the man or woman who says, well, so-and-so fixes my car. Well, how long? Well, heck, I taught him when he was in high school. That's 20 years ago. Okay, good. That's kind of what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody who's been a long-time customer. Then you can follow up and say something like, have you ever had a dispute? Yes. How did they do for you? Well, they did a really good job. Yes, they admitted it. They fixed it and so forth and so on. I had one lady tell me that one of my customers, and she wouldn't tell me who, she said, I got mad at him and told him that this was their fault. And then later, I found out that my daughter had done this to the car and they paid for it. And she said, so they didn't fight with me. And they didn't say no, and they didn't fire me as a customer. They just went ahead and fixed the car, but then later I found out that actually my daughter did what I accused them of doing. And so I guess the end of the question, the conversation would be, well, what did you do? Did you go back and tell the shop that? And maybe yes, maybe no, but it's okay. And there's enough times where the shop does something wrong, and I can vouch for that because my guys have done that too. I'll tell you right now that the other day, we had an old employee and a friend of mine since the 70s, a retired policeman, bring his brand new truck in for the first oil change. And we were busy. That's no excuse. And we forgot to put oil in it. And we gave him the key, patted him on the back, and said, God, you got a beautiful truck. And he made it 17 miles down the road before the motor turned into a big molten piece of metal. So we towed it in, and the motor bill was in excess of $20,000. But it didn't make any difference if he was a first-time customer or if he was one of my best friends, which Annie is a former employee of ours. The fact is we messed that up. We did it. And what happened was is Eddie, the technician, he got called away from that before he put the oil in it. And then when he got back, and he shouldn't have been called away from it by that should have never happened. But when he got back, he assumed that he had already put the oil in it. He closed the hood, pulled it out front. So everybody makes mistakes. My shop, we didn't tighten up a tire on through the grace of God, a friend of mine from high school. And he's driving down the road, and the tire bounces around and passes him. It's not funny, but with the volume of traffic that most of us do, we're going to make mistakes. And all we can do is make it right. And we all have insurance anyway. So if something happens terribly bad, our insurance company is going to step up and step in front of everybody else to make it good. So don't criticize your shop because you read one bad something about that they forgot to put a door sticker on the car for an oil change or something like that. Just take all those kinds of complaints with a grain of salt. That's all. Alrighty, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem or in a car argument at your house, you're welcome to give me a call. 602-508-0960. Okay, so you're not going to call in. You don't have any car questions. You want me to talk to myself for the next hour. That's fine. But if you have a complaint about me or what I say or jokes I make or whatever, it's important to just know exactly what to do. So you're going to call the station, and the name of the owner of the station is Salem Media Network and Salem Media Group, and you're going to complain about Mark Salem. Okay, so I just thought I'd help you out with that circle of information.
Good luck with that.
You're gonna get a hold of this Salem Media Group, and then complain about Mark Salem. And ironically enough, the last name just spells the same. Salem the cigarette. Everybody in my family knows what it's all about. Blackwell Automotive is owned and operated by Tom Blackwell, and him and I have been friends since, gosh, the early 90s. We're two peas cut from the same cloth. Most people that know both of us know that we're both kind of ornery. We both think we know everything there is to know about cars, but Tom doesn't, but I really do. And both of us have been around a long time, and both of us, and I don't know that this is a trait, a good trait, but we both know BS without having to smell it. And that's good for our customers because the technicians aren't going to tell us something that we know isn't true. They're not going to create a hypothesis that we know isn't true. So the benefit is that we're both kind of pretty solidly entrenched in our industry, and we know right from wrong. And I'm proud to say that for both of us, we have staff that mimics the idea that the whole thing here is get the information from the customer, diagnose the car, bid the repair, fix the car, and then go drive the car to make sure the repair has been fixed. And that is the procedure for happy customers. So Blackwell Automotive, he's at 40th and Greenway. He's been a friend of mine for many, many years, and you can't go wrong. He handles that whole northeast Scottsdale area. I don't really have a lot of shops up there. As a matter of fact, he's the only one in that area that has been able to pass the muster. We have a very strict group of criteria in order for the shop owner to have his shop on Mark Salem's best car repair shops list. And one of them is the owner has to be on site, and the owner has to be involved in the dispute resolution process, and the owner has to have some kind of certification so that he can monitor the certification and the quality of the work of his technicians. He can't be a baker, a candlestick maker, and come in and buy an auto repair shop and expect that he's not going to be buffaloed by his technicians, who knows that he was a baker and a candlestick maker. He's not a technician. He wasn't a technician. And I think most every shop owner that's on my list has grease underneath their fingernails in spite of what their wife would desire as they go out to eat. And I'm not the only guy in the world that the wife says, can you clean up your hands a little bit better? And I says, how about I just wear white gloves today? Honey. You got to throw the honey in there, and then it makes it all better. So,
Caller Martin.
Martin, gosh darn it, thank you. You know, Jeremy and I were just talking, and we're usually pulling somewhere between 5 and 8 calls an hour, and you're the only call this hour, and I thought maybe Jeremy had bad breath, but I'm happy to hear you.
Yeah, I listen as much as I can every week, and I thought, oh, I better call him, even though it was kind of a dumb question.
No.
But I always hear all your oil questions every Saturday, kind of funny. But the digital readout that shows the oil life on your car, can you go by that?
Yes. The answer is yes. The car's computer has parameters in it, and for instance, how many times has this car gone through a complete heat cycle? Otherwise, gone from ambient temperature to 220 or more degrees, and then cooled back down. That's important. What's the average speed of this vehicle? If the average speed is driven by my grandmother and she's 21 miles an hour, then her oil changes are going to come a little earlier than mine. And if all of a sudden my grandson gets my grandmother's car or my mother's car and he starts drag racing and driving Central Avenue in Washington on Fridays and Saturdays, then her car's going to go into a longer oil change. So it's an algorithm that's created by temperature, heat cycles, fuel economy, throttle angle, load, weather, humidity, heat, cold, and the answer is yes. They are really pretty doggone close.
Well, that's great to know, because just like most other people, when I get my synthetic oil changes and they put a 3,000-mile comeback sticker, I never follow it. I kind of just go with the digital readout and kind of go from there.
Okay, then let me ask you a question. With your owner's manual on synthetics, it could call for between 10 and 15,000 miles. Mercedes is kind of on the top end at 15. There's a whole lot of 10s and 12s and stuff like that. What does your manual say? Does it give you a miles?
I have a Honda Pilot that I take in, and then I have a Ford F-150.
Okay.
And I have not actually looked on, to be honest, in the manual. And that's kind of why I was, but I hear every Saturday you talking about, you know, they want you to come in at 3,000. They put a full synthetic oil in there, and I know it lasts longer than that.
Yeah, that's my heartburn. You nailed it. Okay, yeah. Here's what I want you to do for me. Please, keep an eye on when you're going to change the oil, and if there's a door sticker on there, it either has it has the mileage when they changed it or when it's due, and sometimes it has both.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll bet that I'll bet you an oil change that the time it calls for an oil change is very close, if not in the middle of the range your owner manual call for. So if your owner manual says 10, I'm betting your onboard computer is going to bring up an oil change flag 10, give or take 1,000. So it could be 9,000, it could be 10, or it could be 11. But I'll bet it's really close.
Okay, yeah. I'll definitely check on that because that would be interesting to know. But, yeah, I always peel that dumb sticker off before I go back in because I don't want to hear it from them. You know, it's like, well, why didn't you bring it back?
Ed.
You know, this is way overdue. And I'm not going to sit there and argue with them. So, yeah.
All right, let me tell you the default that works better than that, okay? I like what you're saying, Martin.
Okay.
You just say, hey, look, you want to argue with my wife? She hates that door sticker in the window, okay? She says she doesn't like it. So what's your name and give me your business card and I'll have my wife call you. And that will shut him up fast. Oh, he'll say, oh, never mind.
Well,
that's fine.
It's a little podunk place over here in Mesa, East Mesa, but I trust him because I've dealt with some other chains and seen the really bad things that they do. And so, I just go in there, this place, only to get an oil change. Anything major, I go to one of your shops or, you know, the Thompson place. And I send my kids to your place or, you know, your recommended places. So I don't even trust most of these places.
Well, thank you for that.
I just appreciate your show. And I've used your shop with my dump truck from hail experience that Mark or that Alan helped me with this past year that I was able to get rid of. So
I heard about the dump truck from hail.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen.
So the company I sold it to in Utah, they're now selling it.
Okay.
But they knew what they were getting. I gave them all the records, and so anyway.
All righty.
No, I appreciate your show. And I appreciate you guys.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Ed. How are you today? What can I do for you?
Hey, Mark, I'm a first-time caller, but I've been listening to you, and I enjoy your show.
Thank you very much.
I do remember once you said you were an expert on oil, so I have two questions, sir.
Okay.
I got a motorcycle that's been sitting for about a year. I broke my leg, and not on the motorcycle. Anyways, for long story short, the bike's been sitting for a year, and I know that you change the oil by a schedule, but regardless, if a year passes, you have to change the oil because of time, but there's only 400 miles on that oil. Is there a little latitude there, or should I just change your oil because it's 1 year regardless?
No, let me explain. There's two things with oil. Number one, the moisture content. So every time you bring it up to operating temperature and it cools down, we're going to generate a little condensation. Okay? Water and oil equals mud. Okay? That's number one.
Uh-huh.
Number two, the longer the engine's running, the more byproducts, the carbon, the metal, the byproducts of the internal combustion engine is going to be in the oil, and then it's going to be caught by the filter. So to answer your question, it makes no damn difference at all if the oil's in the can or in your motorcycle. If it's been sitting there a year, it's as good today as it was in the can. So just start all over again and don't drain the oil. Because nothing's happened. You haven't gone through any heat cycles. You haven't put a big load on it. You haven't loaded it up and gone up to the Colorado Rockies and rode Mount Everest or whatever, Pikes Peak, I should have said. So, no, it's as good as it was when you put it in, and you can start here, and if you're going to go 5,000, 8,000, 10,000, then go ahead. You're fine.
Okay. I was thinking the same thing about, well, the oil sits on the shelf, you know, but it's just sitting in my crankcase, you know? Well,
you're right.
What's the deal?
No difference.
Okay.
No difference.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Real quick. I got a second question.
One more caller, Renee.
In an owner's manual, it says to change your oil every X number of miles or 1 year, whichever comes first and all that. But they say now, if your vehicle's subject to severe conditions, and I'm kind of suspecting that some shops throw that severe conditions description around loosely. So what constitutes severe conditions?
Okay. High speed, heavy loads, Stop and Go, it would not be Grandma Moses going to the liquor store every day. That's not severe. But high speeds, freeway traffic, pulling trailers, running the temperature up on the engine to 5/8 or 3/4 on the gauge, which is normal, but that's okay. So severe is you're working the horse at 75%. So if that's kind of severe, 75% in north. But if you take the horse and all you do is walk down to Circle K and you walk the horse down there and you get a beer and walk home and drink it, that's not severe. But if you get on the horse and you run that son of a gun all the way to Circle K and then you haul two cases of beer back home, that's severe. Does that make sense?
And one other thing about temperature, I know you talk about engine temperature, but environment temperature, like because we live in Phoenix, does it make a difference that we don't live in Seattle? I mean, because it's hotter here. But I'm thinking the engine is designed to deal with high temperatures.
Well, we want
the environment, I guess.
We want the temp. We don't care about the ambient temperature. All the engines are designed to run north at 220 because water boils at 212. Your motorcycles should be running 220 or north of that too. So 220, we're going to take the water, turn to a vapor, and we're going to send it out the PCV valve. So we're not going to have to deal with it. So the temperature is, let's get it into the 220, 230, 240, 250 range. Let's turn the water to a vapor, and boom, we've got clean oil. Not again, but we've got better oil. So that's the reason why that temperature is a big part of that. Okie doke.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
You
betcha.
Thank you very much. Renee?
1 minute.
Hello?
Okay. I've got a 05 Mercury Montego here. Love the car, and I love Fords, but I've got one of these dreaded CVT transmissions.
Okay.
And I've taken it to your transmission place down in Washington, and I've talked to other people, and they put it up on a rack, and they all scratch their head, and they say, oh, my God, they've got a CVT.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And it's got a lot of miles on it. Now, and it's still running. It just makes a noise in neutral and reverse,
Renee, hold on just a minute for me. I'm 20 seconds away, but I want to talk to you because I have an answer, and I'm going to help you, okay? Because I know where you're at, and I know what you're talking about, but I need you to hold. Everybody else, we have four lines open, 602-508-0960. We're going to be on the other hour, on the other side of this break, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody, and Renee, stay there, and Ron, stay there. I've got just a little business. You just heard that somebody said some portions of this program are pre-recorded, and nothing could be further from the truth. This program is live. The only difference between now and in a minute is there's a three-second delay in case Mark says, damn it, and then Jeremy can push a button real fast and take the word out. Okay, so there's nothing pre-recorded about this. We don't even know who's calling in. This station and this show has been the same since, the show's been the same since 1988. So call in. You got a problem with a car? Give me a call, 602-508-0960. Renee, I have great news for you.
Okay. I'm waiting.
Okay. I have the phone numbers of two young men who are the best transmission guys I've ever known, and neither one of them was even born when your car was around. And these guys are just wizards, but they have a very structured business structure, and they don't allow me to share that information with people. So after I took a break, I quickly dialed up Alger, and I go, hey, and he goes, Barron's. I go, what? And he goes, sounds like Barron's. And I said, are you listening to the show? And he goes, yep. And I said, okay. I said, how much to rebuild it? And he goes, Mark, parts are hard to find. He says, you're going to spend a lot of money for parts, depending on what it needs. He says, but you can get a rebuilt one for about $5,000, not installed. That's just in a box in a crate. And I said, do you want me to turn this over to you, TOT, to Alger? And he goes, yeah, send him my way. So this kid, I'm going to tell you my Alger story. Renee, he worked for me. He weighed about 85 pounds. He was tall. He had red hair. I loved his mother, but she whipped him a lot, and he needed it. So one day he says to me at the gas station, I want to work on my car this weekend. And I said, okay, what are you going to do? And he goes, well, I'm going to take – he has a Nova. I'm going to take the automatic out and put a stick in it. And I said, oh, my God. Have you ever done this before? So here's the short story. I say to him, have you got the bell crank? Have you got the pedals? Have you got the spring? Have you got the bell housing? Have you got the cross member? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I said, I'm telling you what, if your car is tying up one of my bays Monday morning, I am just going to just, oh! And he says, okay, this is a true story. Saturday afternoon at 6 o'clock, he started at noon, 6 o'clock p.m., he's laying rubber in front of my house with a stick shift in his Nova. And this kid, him and this other young man, and I called L first, and he didn't answer. They are the best I've ever seen. In all my years of transmissions, they are the best I've ever seen. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to send me an email, mark@marksalem.com.
Marksalem.com.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Send me an email, and I'm not going to talk about your car, but you're going to give me the year, make, and model of your car so nobody sneaks in front of you.
Okay.
And I'm going to put you in touch with Alger.
Oh, okay. And his name is what did you say?
His name is Alger.
Alger.
Mm-hmm. Alger. It's A-L-G-E-R. A-L-G. I've known this kid. He worked for me in 1981 out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I love him like a son. And he's, mm-hmm. but there's nobody in town better. It's either Alger or you can do whatever you want. But I have made an appointment for you to talk to him. He talks for free, and he'd want to look at it, and he'd want to verify what it was, and he'll be able to know what parts he needs before he takes the thing apart.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, because everybody that explains it, they've given me printouts and everything. So it just, you know, I read brochures and different things, and Ford dumped that transmission in, you know, 2008. They only had it for 3 years.
Okay.
They realized they had a problem.
Well, that's what I said to him. I said to him, bearings, what are you talking about? And he goes, I'm listening to the show. And I said, okay, so that's CVT. And he goes, yeah. And I said, I didn't even know they had a CVT back then. And he goes, that's why I do transmissions and you do mechanical work. That's exactly what he said. So
well,
just when you get there, you're going to see lots of old cars there. And Alger's problem, in Mark's opinion, is he's too nice. He doesn't schedule people appropriately. So sometimes if your car goes in there, it might be a day or a week later than he said he would deliver it. But parts is a hard problem with the older transmissions. And that's the first thing out of his mouth is parts are expensive if you can find them. But you got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Talk to him. He's going to talk to you for free. I got to run.
Yeah, at least, I'm familiar with my old dual range hydromatics and C6s.
Yeah,
I'm a pretty old guy.
Yeah. Well, Alger's, you and I are the same age, but Alger's 20 years younger than we are. But still, he's the best guy. So I'm going to pass it on. You send me the email, and I got to go to Ron. Ron, thank you for calling. How can I help you?
Mark. I have an Ford F-150.
Okay.
And my rear door lock is not working properly. I can lock it or unlock it, but it doesn't do both, and it's been intermittently not working correctly, and I have to manually lock it to it doesn't work with my remote lock. Do you guys do that type of work, or is that a dealer issue?
No, not at all. First of all, I want to tell you something. Thank you for bringing that up, and I'm not mad at you. Don't misunderstand me. I'm going to answer your question. But when it comes to, like, dealer guys and Salem's guys or Blackwell's guys or Harker's guys, let me explain. In the independent market, we work on everything from aardvarks to zebras. We have a fundamental knowledge about hydraulics, spark, fuel, emissions, computers, because it's widely over all the cars. Then you've got the guys that work on Fords only, Chevys only, Hondas only, Toyotas only. They're really good at that. So if my Toyota, every time I open up the glove box, I hear a quack noise, you belong at the dealer because they've probably heard it before. But when it comes to comparing fundamentals, comparing skills and abilities, the independent market has a much wider variety. So you can be a horse vet, or you can own a veterinary clinic and handle from aardvarks to zebras. So it's just a fundamental issue, and you can tell my panties get wadded up real tight when the perception is from even my mom said at one time that, you know, dealer technicians know everything. Maybe about your car, but not everything, period. I had one come to work for me one time, and he told me he could do anything. He quit after 2 weeks because we figured out that all he wanted to do was air conditioning work, which, by the way, is very lucrative. But he didn't want anything else to do with a Chrysler product. And come to find out, it's because he didn't know anything other than air conditioning. So, yes, there is a place for both of us in the auto repair industry. But as far as your door lock is concerned, let me tell you something. I'm an old guy, and I'm an ASE master. I got six masters that work for me. On a 1 to 10 scale, this is about a 4. To just diagnose it, fixing it's a piece of cake. But all we have to do is determine, is it the solenoid or is it the switch? That's all we have to determine. So the question is I need you to start opening and closing that lock from the inside that door, and I want to know what difference is it from the master switch to the actual door lock switch on the door. That's what I need to know.
Excellent. Okay. Well, you guys have worked on
next
my color,
Don,
and done a great job. So
okay,
that's terrific.
Yeah, if you've been in my shop, have you ever heard the word Eddie?
He's the guy that works on Ford trucks.
He's my Ford guy. He's been with me 32 years.
He solved the problem before that I had and was fantastic.
He's sitting home right now laughing at me because he's going, he doesn't know the answer. But I do know the diagnostic process, and somebody's going to hand it to Eddie and say, hey, this is intermittent. And Eddie's just going to do just exactly that. He's going to start opening and closing that lock assembly from the door and open it from the master, and we'll figure out real quick. The diagnostic process on this is just a matter of outthinking the stupid car. And if we make a mistake, we'll put the old one back in and we'll take the new one out and we'll start over again.
That's awesome.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Thank you very much.
Do you have time for one more quick question?
If we do, yes, sir, I do. And Don, you stay there. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Yeah. My truck has about 110,000 miles on it, and I really like the truck, and I'm planning on keeping it. My wife and I use it for road trips. I remember some time ago you had mentioned about you have a system where you'll do a complete diagnostic study on a truck or a vehicle and determine what it needs in order to, you know, longevity to keep it and find out if there are any problems that might be coming up in it. Do you guys still do that?
Well, let me explain. Yes, the answer, but it's more of a conversation than anything else. Let me change your question a little bit. Mark, of all the engines you replace, is there a common denominator for the engine that comes in that will never, ever drive another mile? The answer is yes. What is the common denominator? They've been overheated dramatically or run low on oil. When was the last time you saw one that was just worn out? We might see a worn out motor one out of every 50 that we replace. Mm. So what's the symptoms of a worn out motor? Blue smoke out of the tailpipe and uninhibited oil leaking, because the internal pressure of the engine, the blow-by, is so dramatic that we're leaking at every gasket we can and we're blowing blue smoke out the tailpipe. That's the beginning of the end. I want to tell you, we service cars with 200,000 and 300,000 miles on them. Now, And they're fine. If you really wanted to find out what's going on inside your engine, here's a suggestion. Get on the internet and find a place that does oil analysis. Order a little vial. Take it into the shop and have them pull some oil for you. Send it to them. At 1,000 miles later, do another sample. So order 3 vials. And then another 1,000 miles later, do another sample. Now, if there's no metal growth and they check between 5 and 10 different kinds of metal shedding. So if there's no metal growth and the moisture content is well below normal and it's good and there's nothing else in this oil analysis, then you can take all my grandkids to Yellowstone for a month.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. And you can do away with your road service. You don't need towing and stuff. I'm just going to send you along. You can do that for $25, $30 on the internet. What you're looking for is a difference in growth. But if we do 3 tests, 1, 2, and then 3, we have no growth. We don't have any abnormal anything. Then that motor's a good motor. To be honest with you again, 1 out of 50 is worn out. The other 49 are dead because of the nut behind the wheel. Okay?
Okay, that's great, Mark. Thank you so much.
You bet. Don, I got to put you on hold, and I apologize. It's all my fault. It's actually Jeremy's fault, but I'm going to step up in front of him and say it's not him. So, Don, stay right there. I got to take a break, and when we come back, I'm not going to do anything but say, Don, how can I help you? So we'll be back right after this. Okie dokie. Let me tell you about a couple of shops, and I'll tell you what kind of group and fraternity we are. Kurtz Auto Repairs at I-17 in Bell, and Action Auto Repairs a mile north at I-17 in Deer Valley. And Kurt is a really good friend of Action Auto Repair and Tom. So they've been friends for years. They respect one another. And, of course, if you go to one and complain about the other, the first one is just going to take care of the problem and call the other guy and say, hey, I took care of something for you. That's it. So if you're in that area of I-17 between Deer Valley and Bell, you have two of the finest shops I know within about a five-mile radius of that area. And you've got Action Auto at Deer Valley and I-17 northwest corner. And you got Kurtz on south or northwest corner, northeast corner of Bell. So Bell and Deer Valley, you've got two great shops, Action Auto and Kurtz Auto. Let's go back to the phones, and we were talking to Don. Don?
Well, I hear you talking about me again. You talk about the nut behind the steering wheel.
Yes. Yes. You fit that bill.
Yeah. Anyway, got a question. S10 is sitting in front of the house, right?
Okay.
The rains come, and I go out and get in it. Crank, 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 crank. No fire. Let the key loose. It starts to diesel. I'm going, no. So I hit it again. And it crank, 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 crank. And I thought, what the heck's going on here? So finally I get a,
Timing belt?
So what?
Timing belt?
No. It's a V6 like yours.
Okay. I don't know. Finish the story, though. Go ahead.
So finally I get it to fire. And it's acting like it's missing. I'm thinking, okay, moisture underneath the cap, but the cap has never been off since I've owned the truck. So what's going on? So I thought, okay, I got to go to Walmart. So I went to Walmart, and I bought a can of sea foam to pour in it. It, crank, 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 crank again, and then it fired. I'm going, okay, let it run for a while, see what happens. Drive it 25, 50 miles. It's fine. Go back home, park it, try it again in the morning, crank, 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 crank. So I've come to the thing that it's come to the mind of, that it's got a mind of its own. And so I figure the moisture on top of the fuel tank has got something going on.
Okay, there has to be an end to this story. No. There has to be an end. So let's get to the end.
Okay. So I drive it, and when I pull away from the house, there's a great big puddle underneath it. I'm going, okay. So...
Puddle of what?
Puddle of water.
So you think water on top of the fuel tank's causing it to diesel underneath the hood?
Well, no, because it's not supposed to diesel at all.
Okay. I don't know where we're going with this, Don, but I got to, let's get to the point.
Okay.
What happened? What did you do to fix it?
Well, it's not supposed to diesel, but it did dry out, and it's running fine now. Does it make any sense?
Okay. Yeah, I can't help you because I don't know. Water on top of the gas tank has never been anything in all my years of fixing cars that had any problem,
yeah,
other than the fact that if it had an electric fuel pump and they overfilled the tank, then we spewed gas. But I don't know the answer. But here's my promise. When you get a chance, either email me or call me and tell me what the heck fixed it. The dieseling on a cold start is also kind of counterproductive because dieseling indicates that something's igniting the fuel before the spark plug does, and typically it's on a hot engine. And I've never heard anybody experience dieseling on a cold engine. So that's, I'm kind of concerned about that as well. But Don, I got to run. Thanks, buddy. Craig, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark, this is another F-150 question. I have a 2016 F-150 2.7 liter V6. And when I start it in the morning, I get a puff of white smoke, gray smoke, out of the engine. After it warms up, I don't see it, if I accelerate or driving slow, but just seems to be in the morning when it's cold, or it can happen during the day if the engine has or if the car is set.
Okay, so now it's my turn to ask questions. Does it use oil? Do you ever add oil? And if you add oil, is it at the add mark or below the add mark? So do you ever add oil to the motor in between oil changes?
No, and I don't know that at the oil change. I don't do the oil change myself, but they've never commented that, geez, you're low on oil.
Okay. And so are there any fluid levels that are of a concern that you're adding to on a regular basis? Are they all normal and nobody's saying anything about fluid changes?
Same answer there. I don't notice that... you know, coolant fluid would be has been brought to my attention.
So, okay, all right.
Now, I haven't paid attention to it. You know, other than bring it in for normal oil changes, nobody said anything.
Okay, well, there's three colors that come out of the tailpipe. There's white or gray, and actually, they all can be misconstrued by different people. Even the same five technicians can look at the smoke and come up with three different colors on it. But white is usually coolant, or it could also be gray. Then if you have oil, it's usually blue or some tint of blue. And if it's fuel, it's usually black. So those are the three colors that we have coming out of the tailpipe. But what I was fishing for was, I had a low coolant light the other day, which means I have a cooling leak in the system. And I've leaked a little bit of coolant out, so now I'm at a critical level. And so the question then is let's go find and fix the coolant leak. If you're using oil, then it's going to puff pretty much... if the old, how many miles are on it, by the way?
80,000.
Okay. Well, 80,000, and you got 4 or 5 years, so it's not like you're driving the wheels off of it, right?
No, not
okay.
Too much.
Do you ever
take occasional long trips, but I use it back and forth the office.
Okay. Do you ever, kind of punch it to the floor and let it, haul butt for a little while?
I've had my share of speeding tickets.
All right. I was searching for that.
I haven't, but I can certainly. Are you suggesting that I try that, or is that how I drive? I guess.
A
follow up.
If you brought it, if you and I were friends, and you were my next door neighbor, I would just say, "Give me your car for a couple of days," and I'd just hop rod the hell out of it. And I mean, I would rattle it.
Yeah.
I would take it into the high RPMs, and I'd want to shake a little carbon out of the motor. I'd like to clean out the exhaust. I want to take this horse out and run it hard, but not kill it, And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I can't explain the color because you don't have matching symptoms. And when you have an oil issue and you're leaking oil into the cylinder and you start it and you get that puff of light blue smoke or gray smoke, that ultimately is going to end up with a fouled up spark plug, and you haven't said a word about an engine miss either. So I'm not quite sure.
No.
I worry about this, but my advice to you is every once in a while, when it's appropriate, slam the throttle to the floor, hit passing gear, and take it up to a little higher speed before you back off the throttle. Let's just kick the horse with our spurs and make it run real hard for just a little while, and then back off and let it cool off, and see if that would help with this small puff of smoke that you have. But you haven't given me anything that really concerns me yet. I don't know where I'd spend your money. Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. Bob and Steve, stay right there because I've got to take a break in about 30 seconds. So, Bob, you're first. Steve, you'll be second. Year, make, and model, and then what the situation is or what the argument is with you and your wife, or which oil should I use or what tires should I use, those kinds of things, pieces of cake. But you can go in a completely different direction. But if there's going to be a story with it, we'll just get to the preamble real quick. So 602-508-0960. If you'd like to call in, we've got Bob first, Steve second, and then of course we have three open lines available, and you're welcome to take those. We'll be back. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Jeremy. So, folks, we must have had a problem with the phones because right after I said Bob and Steve, They both disappeared off of our lines. So we're pretty sure that that's on our end. So if Bob and Steve wants to, we didn't hang up on you, I promise. If you guys want to call in, I'll move you to the front of the line. Right now, I'm going to take Kevin. But Bob and Steve, if we hung up on you, we're really, really sorry. Kevin, how can I help you today?
Well, good morning, Mark. I have a 2013 Ford F-150 half-ton, and it's got a towing package on it, but that's kind of irrelevant. I've got this loud clicking noise in the dashboard when I first start it. I mean, it goes clack, 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 and then it quits. And then sometimes it comes back on.
Okay.
And it happens almost every time I turn the truck on.
Okay.
It's not the air conditioner because I can have everything off and it'll still make that loud clack, clack, clack noise.
Okay.
And then go away after a couple of, after about 10 or 15 clacks.
Okay. We're going to ignore that last sentence that you said. It's not the air conditioning. What I want you to do is, first of all, is it left side center vent or right side of the dash? Driver's side, passengers?
Right behind the right hand side of the steering wheel.
Okay, okay. Now,
in that part of the dash.
Okay. What I want you to do is I want you to park at when you shut it off, I want you to have your air conditioning controls in different positions each time. Otherwise, I'll give you an example. Before you shut it off, set it for warm defrost. Okay? Then shut it off.
Okay.
Then the next morning, start it up. Then the next time, set it on maximum AC. And then start it up and shut it off. Next morning, okay, you'll start it up to see if it's there. And then the next one is vent. I think what you've got, I'm guessing, I think what you've got is you've got something in the climate controls that's ratcheting. And if I can get you to change it by using max AC, shutting it off with max AC on and then starting it up with those settings intact and max AC, max heater and vent, if you say to me, well, it doesn't on this one, these two, but not this one, at least we know we're on the right track. So okay, now all we have to do is we're going to have to go underneath the dash, and we're going to have to figure out which one. There's going to be a door that's a hot and cold door. Then there's going to be a door that goes defrost, center vent, and floor. And then there's going to be another door that's going to be outside air and inside air. And I think you've got one of those doors ratcheting. Now, if you could stick your hand underneath the dash and say, you can feel it here, that would help too. Yeah, I'm just trying to save you some diagnostic money.
Okay, well, it's all under warranty, and I was going to take it over to Sanderson Ford and see what they can figure it out.
I'm going to let you say that, and I'm going to comment on that. All the dealerships that I've worked with and for, and I work a lot in the legal arena, so somebody's suing somebody else, or I'm working for an insurance company or a lawyer or whatever, I can tell you that my favorite dealership with respect to integrity is Sanderson. So I'm glad you're going there.
Okay.
Because I believe that if they're not the very best, they're the best with someone in one and a half positions below them or something like that. I just really do believe Sanderson Ford is one of the best dealerships I've ever had the opportunity to work with. I had one time one of their senior guys raise his hand and goes, "It's our fault. We're going to take care of it." And I go, "Why am I here?" And he goes, "I don't really know." I said, "Well, I'll call and ask." And so I said, "Why am I here?" And they said, "Well, they said no." And I said, "No, they've been overruled because this guy's going to take care of it. We're done. Goodbye." And they did. So I was really pleased with that. But anyway, if you could kind of touch something or change the climate controls and say it happens here but not here, I think that'll save you some diagnostic money. Okay?
Okay, I'm not going to lose my fingers sticking my fingers up there. And
I promise you.
Around, right?
No, because the blower motors.
One time I was working on my old 1965 Ford and trying to figure out what was going on, and I stuck my hand in the blower fan kind of lost a little bit of skin there. I had that old 65 for 38 years, and boy, it was a nice truck.
You won't be able to hit the blower motor on virtually any car that's made in the last 20 years. So it's not an exposed kind of thing. Now, if you cut a big hole in the dashboard and you stuck your hand down inside that vent there, you'd probably trim your fingernails. But other than that, you're not going to have that problem like you had in the old days. Anyway, thank you,
okay,
Kevin.
Okay, well, I'll reach up under there and see what's going on.
Yeah,
okay,
just see if you can feel it. If you can feel it, you say to them, "I put a piece of red tape there." But if you put your hand on that, that's you can feel the noise right there. That's what we need. Okay, thank you very much.
It might be a door instead of an electrical relay that's turning on and off real quick or something?
Well, it could be that. It could be that something is cycling on and off. It could also be that we've got one of the fan blades that's bent or not formed right. It could be that you or one of your grandkids dropped something down the defrost vent and when you first started up in the morning. And it can also be a door that's chattering. We use electric motors to open and close flaps. And so sometimes the little plastic gears get stripped, and so they chatter on us. And then finally they bite, and they open or close. So that's what I'm looking for is I'm looking at which one of those blend door, fresh air door, defrost, center vent, floor door, which one of those blend doors is making the noise. That's what I'm trying to get to. Okay, thank you very much, John. I know, Jeremy, I'm going to take John anyway. Don, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, Mark. I have an 08 HHR. And over a few years ago, I had this problem where the computer kept shutting down the air conditioning because it thought it was overheating.
Uh-huh.
And I had it up to the dealership twice, and they changed the thermostat three times. And it would happen, like one time it went like 6 months without happening, and then it did it again. And I got fed up with them. I took it to a local shop here in Peoria, and they diagnosed it, figured it out in about 2 hours. There was a factory defect in the wiring harness.
Okay.
What I'm at now, and it kind of touches on what you had before with the temperature, even in 112-degree temperature sitting and idling for quite a while, the car never goes much above 185, 190.
That's something's wrong.
From what I'm listening from what you said, that's not right.
No, it needs to be 220. I wonder if the thermostat is stuck open, and the way I would do that is I'd take the radiator cap off first thing in the morning. I'd start it up and have my wife hold the RPMs up to about 1,000 RPM. I'd look down into the radiator, and I'd see if I see water moving. Now, rippling and moving are two different things. Sometimes a guy will take the top radiator hose with the clamp loose and stuff like that, but no, your car needs to run at 220, and you're running way too cold. And so we need to move that thing up to 220. And otherwise, you're going to end up with a lot of peanut butter as your oil. We're not going to boil the water out of the oil, and you're going to end up taking that engine's life into half. So, no, we need to get it up. But this is an easy issue. So either the thermostat's gone, the thermostat's wide open. It's going to be one of those two things.
Do you think it's possible they could have put the wrong thermostat in?
I think it's possible that somebody could have fixed it outside of industry standards. Is that a nice way to say it?
There you go. Well, that would have been a dealer.
Well, I don't know. I'm just saying but here's the deal. We'll know the answer to that question once we fix the temperature problem.
Call
that's
Lisa.
It. Okay.
There you go. We'll get it corrected. Thank you, Mark.
Lisa, you stay right there, and Bob and Steve, if you're back, you're first and second, but Lisa, stay right there. We'll be right back. Okie dokie, 46 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, we're going to go to Lisa, just like we promised. Lisa, how can I help you?
Hi, Mark. We need a new family car.
Okay.
And the question is, we've had a truck, we currently have an older van. In this marketplace where our pre-owned and used cars are pretty high, and we're open to all the makes and models, we like the Toyota, but what would you recommend? And we are open. We're a family of four, but three are still here. To negotiate online with dealers, to warehouse pricing, no negotiation. We want better mileage automobile and pre-owned versus new. What would you?
There's 582 models of cars and trucks that we have in our database at work. So I can't, what I really do well is, Mark, these are the three cars we're looking at, and here's the people that are going to be driving them and using them. That's kind of what I need. Here's what I will do for you. I have a friend of mine named Rustin, and Rustin works for one of the large, dealerships that has multiple locations all over.
Okay.
Rustin is supposed to help the VIPs. So, this guy who's a big shot at the dealership's neighbor, he turns him over to Rustin, and Rustin finds him a car and says, this is what you write your check for, and this is what the sticker is, and this is what you got. And it's just kind of a path of least resistance. And I'm allowed to use him every once in a while, and I'd be happy to have you talk to him. He has both pre-owned and he has new. And you need to describe exactly what you want, and then he'll tell you, I've got a new one. It's this color. He'll send you a link to it. Here's what it looks like. And your thing is how much do I write my check for?
Right.
Whether you finance it through the credit union or whatever, it makes no difference. It's just how much do I have to write. So you're going to email me mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Now, stay right there. Do we have caller ID on our phones?
We may, actually.
Okay. If you do, would you text me the name Lisa and the last two digits of her phone number? Lisa, don't you give them to me. And then that way, in case I get 40 Lisas that send me an email, I'll know which one to call back. So,
okay.
Lisa, stay on the line, and I'll get your number from you.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Stay on the line, because Jeremy's going to get the last three digits or four digits of your number. I don't need it, just to know that I'll give that to Rustin. But I'm sorry,
is it Rustin, R-U-S-T-I-N?
Yes, and I'll give you his number. It's a very secret number.
Oh, keep it secret too.
Yeah. So his job is to take care of the needs of all the employees, and I get to sneak in there every once in a while. So I'm going to use it on you, and I don't make any money on this transaction, not a dime. If Rustin were to offer me $100, I'd tell him put it on her bill. Just put a credit on her bill. So I'll help you. It's just you called at the right time. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, you bet. Buying cars today is really tough because Lisa said it perfectly. You've got the really good used ones that are asking premium dollars, and then you've got the brand new ones that are almost the cost of a used Primo. So that makes all the difference in the world. But no matter where you shop for your car, no matter who helps you buy your car, get in the habit of what do I write my check for? You see, because then there's the car. Now, I'm using stupid examples here, so just forgive me. There's the car, and then there is sales tax, and then there's license, and then you could have delivery fee, and then you could have desert protection package that was installed on the car when we first got it, so you have to buy it now. And then we put this little snowball in the trunk to make the thing smell good, and that's another $89. And then this car comes with an aftermarket warranty, and then this car comes with this, and this car comes with that. And by the time you get done, the old days of the car, the sales tax, and the license plates is gone. And that's what's really important to Mark Salem. When I negotiate for a car, I am well covered. I know exactly what I want. I know exactly what I think I want to pay for it. And all I'm really looking at is interior color, exterior color, and interior trim level. That's it. So not too long ago, a long time ago, I wanted a Dodge truck, and I found a red Dually in Pennsylvania. And I had him sending me pictures of it, and it's exactly what I wanted. Everything about it was exactly what I wanted. It was a Dodge, and it was the pre-DEF. It's a 2012, and it had the Longhorn interior, which is akin to the King's Ranch interior on the Ford trucks. It's the fancy leather and cowboy stuff, and it's that's what I wanted. And when we began to negotiate, I heard that same kind of, well, the truck is this, and then we have destination fees, and we have this, and then we have that, and then we also put a desert protection package on it. In Pennsylvania, you sell desert protection packages. So at the end of the day, I ended up buying the truck for the truck sales tax, and that was it. And I carried a paper plate with me to put on the truck and drive it home. My wife and I drove it home. So it's those are the kinds of things that you know, you should just pay attention. Every line item is why this one, why that one, why this one, why that one. Okay, the bottom line on car repair is it's really up to you to protect yourself. And the easiest way to protect yourself is this simple hint. As in most shady discussions between two people where one of them has ulterior motives, there's things that said and numbers given that may not end up the same at the end of the day. It's always a good idea to communicate in writing because that lives forever. So when you're at home and you took your car in for an oil change and you told them to do synthetic and they put a 3,000-mile sticker on you, otherwise telling you in 3,000 miles you have to come in, that's really a 10 to 15,000-mile oil. And you can imagine that if I sell you my premium oil change package and if I can get you to come in at 3,000 or 5,000 miles as opposed to 10 or 15, then I get to sell you a premium oil change package four times when really the one should last all of that. And those are the things that kind of are going on, not kind of, those are the things that are going on in a small number of shops and business philosophies in the Phoenix area. We're seeing, and actually it happens in Payson too, because I saw one the other day that was exactly that. We had just, the customer had just put, a friend of mine had just put synthetic oil in it, and I looked at the door sticker and it's 3,000 miles more than the odometer. Well, I said that, let me look at that, and it's a 020, that's a synthetic oil. And so they put 020 in it, and the oil change was like $130, and that's the price for it. Yes, that's true. But then they put a 3,000 mile oil sticker on it. No, that's a 10 or 12,000 or 15,000 mile oil sticker. So let's look at the owner's manual. In this case, it was a 12,000 mile, so we just changed the door sticker to 12,000 on top of what we were today. You can understand how that benefits the shop if he can get you to come in every 3,000 miles with an oil change that's going to cost you between 95 and 150, depending on how many quarts of oil you use. The difference is this. Conventional oil is the oil that we've had since the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. It has a 3,000-mile oil change. Three to five, I'll give you that. 3,000 to 5,000-mile oil change. Then we went into a semi-synthetic. So it's kind of half conventional and half synthetic. Well, that's a 5 to 7,500-mile oil change interval. Then we have this synthetic that goes from 7,500 miles to 15,000, depending on your owner's manual. So what I try to do for our customers is tailor the oil change to their annual use. So if I have Mrs. Jones at 3,000 miles, I'm going to put conventional, I'm going to put the $30 oil change on hers, and I'm going to bring her in every January, February, or March. That's it. I'm going to bring her in once a year and change her oil. But if she goes 7,500 miles, I'm going to put a semi-synthetic in. That oil change is going to be somewhere in the $75 range, give or take $25. And I'm going to bring her in, but she gets one oil change a year, and the oil will last the entire time. Then I've got, like, my wife, who drives 10, 12, 15,000 miles a year. I'm going to put synthetic in her car, and I'm going to bring her in every April or May. Here's why. I want her to go through the summer with fresh oil. So all of the cars that Mark Salem is responsible for, and we have a fleet in our business as well as the ones in my family, if there's 40 or 50 cars, they're all on an oil change interval that brings them in April or May. And that way they go through the summer, which is the worst part of Phoenix, through the summer, with fresh oil. But they also have one oil change a year. That doesn't mean we're not going to check the fluids when we check the gasoline or when we fill it up. It doesn't mean that we're not going to check the air and the tires every once in a while. We can't just not pay attention to the car. Because the oil change really is a physical for the car. Not only do we change the oil and the filter, but we're supposed to check your tires, your fluids, your belts, and your hoses. Your brakes, your exhaust, oil leaks, all that kind of stuff. It's a visual inspection. That's part of the oil change. So the uncomfortable part for many of us is if we put you on a 15,000-mile oil change interval, we'd still like to check your tires and look at your fluids once or twice in that period of time. And many of us have said to our customers, it's okay. Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are out of the question, but at any other time, if you want someone to just quickly check your tires and your fluids and your belts and your hoses, it's a visual inspection of the hood and the tires. We can do that for you as long as our door sticker's on your car. So those are the kinds of things that how we transition our industry. We are nowhere near that 3,000-mile oil change. To be honest with you, that goes back to like 1980. And everything from probably 1990 north of there, we really should have you at a 3 to 5 or a 5 to 7,500 or 7,500 to 15,000. Those are the three areas of oil change that your car. And if you don't know, look at your owner's manual. It'll tell you. It'll be that simple. It'll tell you what kind of oil it wants you to use and what kind of oil change intervals your car is set up for. The oil change intervals are kind of important because the oil does wear out. And we don't want to leave oil in your car that's not protecting the metal components. It's not protecting the rust from rust. It's not protecting from oxidation and all the other stuff. And we don't want the oil to turn to mud because mud causes engine failure. So when the motor oil gets really thick, like frosting, and it's full of water because you haven't gotten through a heat cycle. You haven't taken it on the highway in 100 years. That's where things get really, really ugly. So stick close to your oil change shop, but pay attention to two things. How much did I pay for the oil change? What kind of oil, level one, level two, level three, and what kind of interval am I at? Those are three things that you should really pay attention to, because our industry is full of people right now who are putting premium oil in but calling you in at 3,000 miles when really you should go 10 or 15. So that's the hard part. Anyway, my email is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem, Salem like the cigarette.com. You're always welcome to send me an email and include your phone number because I'm going to ask you more questions. See you next week.